Hello there, I'm Chris Difford and welcome to the podcast I never thought it would happen, made in collaboration with the wonderful charity Help Musicians. I'm delighted to introduce you to the singer, guitarist and main songwriter for a young Scottish band. A little indie rock band perhaps? No, I don't think so, when you see where they're playing these days. They formed at school and together they've experienced such great successes. Playing South by Southwest, supporting Kings of Leon, and signing with a major label, which they then walked away from, thinking they could do it better. But don't we all? Please welcome Jack Cochran from the Snuts. Jack, welcome.
Hi, mate. Hey. How you doing? Nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you, too. I've been listening to your music and following you for a while. Amazing. I'm so pleased to see you. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks so much, man. Yeah, very well, very well. Kind of battling the stormy weathers of Glasgow at the moment, but all is well.
I'm going to be there in at the weekend, I think I'm playing there, so I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome, man. Where are you playing?
I haven't got a clue.
I'm sure it'll be great, man. I'm sure it'll be great.
It's always great playing there. It's really good, yeah. So, with your band, when you first kicked off, what was that like? What was the feeling like when you sort of decided that, you know, this is the career for me. I'm not going to be any other person than Jack and the Snuts.
You know, we've actually been reminiscing quite a lot lately about, you know, what it was that kind of started this for us. And I think, you know, at the start, there was no kind of correlation for us of being recording artists and being live artists. It was all just live driven, you know, the culture in which we grew up in when it comes to music was all about that live show. It was all about that experience, being in the audience and stuff like that. So that was very much at the forefront of, you know, why we were doing this. We wanted to pack rooms out, whether it was just local pubs, because we often say, you know, I don't think there's much of a difference in the feeling of playing to 10,000 people than there is playing to 30. So it was always that buzz for us, that kind of connection of if we make these songs, will people sing along with them? So yeah, that was a very, very start for us, was about, that was the priority.
Yeah, it can be quite an addictive feeling, I know from my experience, when you're young and you get on a stage and suddenly all these people are looking up at the stage, digging the songs. It's kind of like, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, man. It definitely keeps pulling you back, for sure.
Yeah, and I see that you're going to the States. Is that for the first time, or have you been before?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times before. This is the first headline over there, which is really cool, because I always think when you dip into these new territories, for want of a better word, you know, you're starting again, so it's always this kind of real humbling kind of process. You know, it's like, we need to give 100 here all the time. You know, we need to put the hours in the van, on the road, on the tarmac, put the hours in upstairs as well. Yeah, so it's really exciting, man. Really excited to just hit these places and, you know, just feeling really positive that we are connecting with people enough for them to put their hands in their pocket and spend their hard-earned dollars to come see us.
Yeah, for us as a young band, when we first went over there, it was like, we're going to where, you know, rock and roll music was born, and it's kind of, you go there as a tourist as well as a musician. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, man, for sure. I'm a big, like, I think, you know, throughout my whole career, I'm always craving, you know, a bit of the old school. I think that's quite similar to a lot of artists. You know, you want to play music in the way that you envisioned it. You know, you want to promote music. You want to record music in the way that, you know, your favourite artist did. So I think it's nice having that bit of mythology around America, you know, dipping into record stores and stuff like that and playing these rooms that I always find it, you know, quite important to us when we're playing these venues that are like iconic in this person's town. You know, the same way that we have these venues up here that we're like, man, this venue means everything. This act, they started here.
Yeah.
And it's cool when you dip into these rooms and they're like, someone just goes, here's the history of this room. So pretty wicked.
Yeah, David Byrne did a really interesting documentary from the Talking Heads. He did a documentary about the architecture of music, and he talked about people like you and me, the kind of music that we make is for a certain kind of venue. You know,
yeah, man.
Bands like Coldplay, whatever you think about them, they build their music for stadium rock. Can you ever see yourself on a big stage like that?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, it's definitely always a goal, but I'm a big lover of the steps and the process and the journey that kind of to get there. You know, I think we actually as a band are quite guilty of holding back in terms of where we're playing and what we're trying to do in terms of, like, you know, getting these opportunities to go play this massive place and this place. You know, and we're like, we could do that, but it's like we're still quite happy doing. We're trying to get there everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's nothing worse than the thought of, like, we could probably do an arena in Scotland and that would be great and we'd get, probably get a payday from it and stuff like that. I'm like, but that, ethically, that doesn't feel like why we're in a band. It's like, if you can get there by the way that you've, you know, encouraged yourself and other people to be involved, that's great. You know, if you put the work in to get there everywhere, tremendous.
Absolutely.
But right now, like, I love the building blocks.
Yeah.
I love, like I said, the old school, you know, like the art, the technical side of just getting yourself, your body and your music into this place and seeing if that's connecting in the way that you hope it would.
When you were a young lad and you first discovered music, I suppose, was that through your parents' record collection or were you listening to the radio? What was it about?
For sure, I think there's loads of different ways. I think, like, my generation certainly are kind of like, we've kind of had to be dealing with a lot of different types of technology. To a point where it's all kind of muddled and confused as one. I certainly remember listening to a lot of music in the car with my mum and dad. My dad's, like, really big on, like, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, stuff like that. I'm also, like, really into, like, Deep Purple and stuff like that. I actually went to see them with my dad in Glasgow. It was actually really good. I was surprised, man. Really good. So, like, in the car a lot, I think even, like, something we don't talk about a lot was, like, the music channels. I would go to my grand's when I was a kid and she would have like Sky TV. We didn't have that in the house. And you're just hearing all these songs that were like the big hitters. Like, I remember hearing like Nickelback and like Red Hot Chili Peppers and stuff like that. And just being like, what the fuck is this?
It's all right, don't worry. How did you come across The Loving Spoonful?
What's that?
What's the song that you covered?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, I'm with you. Somewhere in the City.
Somewhere in the City, yeah.
Yeah,
how did
man.
You come across that?
That's so funny, man. I've not thought about that in so long. It was actually someone we were working with. It's like, you know, Strongbow, a drinks company or whatever, were looking for a band to cover that. I had to listen to the song. I was like, man, this could be pretty cool. Like, and the way that we do things, we were kind of like still like really kind of like heavily guitar orientated at this point. Mm-hmm. And we're still like super excited by guitar sounds. I was like, oh man, I think we could bring that to us. It was a cool song, man. I forgot all about that.
It's killer, yeah. I mean, do you do many covers?
Mostly, like, dressing room covers.
Yeah.
You know, some songs, especially when we're away, man. I think, like, there's such a, like, kind of cathartic energy playing songs that kind of, like, bring you home for a minute. And I think covers certainly do that. And just bring you together, you know. I think there's always that, you know, you'll know yourself, like, being on the road is, like, no matter how many people you're with, it's super isolating. And I think there's something about, like, playing covers together that just, like, brings a room together a little bit, man.
It's a bonding, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely, yeah. And what lyricists are you drawn towards? Do you like people like Justin Curry, for instance?
I don't know who that is, man.
You should look him up. He's got a band called Delamitri.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're Scottish.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no, you know what? Never, ever listened. But is he good? Good guy?
I think he'll blow your mind.
Amazing, man. I'll make sure to check that out. I mean, growing up, I was like really and still super fascinated by Bob Dylan. I'm like one of those like Bob Dylan nerds and like watch a lot of his like documentaries and really interested in his stalkers and stuff like that. But I actually got to see him. He was in Glasgow last year.
You did?
It was beautiful, man. I've been waiting so long to see him. A couple of my friends are also really big and like Bob Dylan. They'd seen him a couple of times and I'd been like quite disappointed, I think. As many Bob Dylan gig goers can be, I think. But I loved him, man. He pretty much like such a like unusual gig experience, which for me just made it incredible. Like, so it was like phones off at the start and a locked case at the door.
Really?
Everybody seated. No one was allowed to go up for a pee unless it was in between a song. Mm-hmm. So you would go for a pee in between a song and then you'd have to wait. The doors wouldn't open again till the next song was finished and stuff like that. And, like, no hits, not even a mention of a hit. And I was just like, I loved it, though, man. I was like, this is, like, proper, like worth appreciating, you know, like, the absolute commitment to what he's doing.
Wow,
like,
Jack.
At that age as well. But, like, yeah, that was, like, certainly that was some of the, like, lyricists I was drawn to. Like, like a bit of John Mayer, Nick Drake, Joni Mitchell, like mostly like a lot of folk stuff, Nathaniel Rateliff. That's kind of my vibe. And like, it's, my life's so fast paced, I like to just musically, when I'm listening, bring it down.
Yeah. Dylan is a fantastic inspiration for anybody writing songs. I mean, some of his lyricism is brilliant. And his new album, I'm surprised that you kind of go for, because it's quite old school and it's...
I quite like it, man. I think it does a thing.
It does a thing, yeah. Does it make you feel brave as a writer that you can be challenging to?
Yeah, for sure. It's actually quite an odd process on this record that we've just made, because kind of made a decision earlier on that I wanted to be a bit more direct.
Yeah.
Lyrically, I think, you know, maybe in the past, I hate repeating stuff in terms of songwriting.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes out, I'm like, what's different? How can this be different from what I've just done? In this record, I want to be much more direct. Mm. Instead of kind of like, maybe try go down like a Dylan-esque route, like kind of, you know, maybe suffocating some of the lines in like a big poetic fire blanket or something. I wanted to be like, what is the simplest way I can say this so that, you know, when someone hears this for the first time, they can tell themselves the story that I'm trying to tell, or they can tell their story in the song. So that was quite challenging, like to almost simplify and be more direct this time around.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, it took me years to figure that one out.
I mean, I think that's our thing. It's like when you're writing songs, it's like it is uncomfortable. Weirdly, like some, I think once the song's done, like there's definitely like there's healing within the process. But while the process for me is happening, it's not something that I ever feel really comfortable inside. You're always deciding how much to reveal, how much you want it to be you, how much you want people to understand your life. For most of the time, people probably don't care as much as you think they will. But yeah, certainly something that's always, I always find uncomfortable writing songs, but also like something that I need to do, which is pretty crazy.
Well, no, it's a fantastic thing for you to say, because it is like therapy. You know, your audience, they want to know who you are. You know, they don't just want another love song. They want to know who you are and what you're about. And that's why I sort of brought up someone like Justin Curry, because you'll find the honesty in his lyricism is a very valuable tool. And Dylan's the same. And, you know, you've obviously much younger than I am. You've got the opportunity to be honest with your audience from the off, really, which is brilliant.
Yeah, man. I also like Edgy. Listen to a guy, Nathaniel Rateliff.
Right.
Oh, man, you should check him out. He's a really, really cool guy. I actually found him on this documentary you should definitely check out. I think it was like Communion Records. Uh-huh. And it's a documentary called Austin to Boston.
Okay.
So the idea is they get Ben Howard, The Staves, Nathaniel Rateliff, a band called Bear's Den, one other guy from Counting Crows, drives, but they basically do, they take like three Volkswagen campers to all the states in America. And these acts are all big at this point, but they're just playing like 200 cap rooms. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a real deep dive into how they are and like the almost like the negative elements, like the therapeutic elements of why they're writing and why they're playing.
Yeah.
But the final way lifts like that, man, like just so painful. All his solo records are just proper pain all the way through. And now it's nice watching him progress into playing with a live band, and it's all this joyful stuff, like he's kind of came out the other end. Really cool guy. So check him out, man.
Oh, I will indeed.
I'm Sarah Carton, and I'm proud to be one of the thousands of artists supported by Help Musicians. I go under the artist name Girl Next Door. I'd say I'm an indie electronic artist and songwriter and producer as well, and I'm based in London. In terms of when I wanted to become a musician, I can't remember the moment. It must have been very young, because I've always wanted to be a singer. And I remember sort of doing little concerts with my parents when I was about 4 or 5, is one of my earliest memories. I think defining moment is probably when I was around 9 or 10. I was struggling a bit with like focus at school. I was getting told off for being loud and not focusing in. And then my mum put me into a musical theatre club, and I just took to it really well. I loved the sort of process of auditioning, learning the song, rehearsing with a piano. And I think my first performance on stage at our local town's hall, I think it was one of the most brilliant moments, like being able to see into the audience and seeing this thing that you've been working on for months was a real achievement for me at that age. And I think ever since then, I've just been obsessed with that feeling of singing live and wanting to connect with people from a stage, I think. Some of my favourite artists when I was growing up were Kate Nash, Jamie T. And then when I got a bit more into my teens, I became obsessed with The Streets. And Original Pirate Material was one of the albums I just listened to on repeat all the time when I was growing up. And I think I just loved the way it was more storytelling rather than just a song. And I just thought it was so poetic and clever. And I just loved the minimalism of their production as well, especially with The Streets. And I really loved playing with that and sort of blending poetry and music. And I went to uni, did a drama degree, created my own little drama group when I left uni, and we sort of toured and did shows that had sort of contemporary music in them. So I was doing my songwriting, but I was always thinking, oh, I wish I could do this and just write music, but I have no idea how you break into that world. And it was actually only in lockdown that I decided to do a course in music production. I learned, oh, you actually need a producer to make music, which I didn't even know what that was. I mean, YouTube can kind of teach you anything these days. I've learned how to produce mainly through YouTube for my first few tracks. And I produced a demo of my first single, Beaches on the Thames, in lockdown on my laptop. Sent it to a friend of mine who I'd met who did a bit of production. He added some elements to it and put it out completely independently, did the art on Photoshop, emailed some blogs, not really knowing what I was doing, off my personal email account. And it actually got put straight on Spotify editorial playlists and got some really good press. That's probably my biggest achievement, just sort of figuring out without anyone guiding me how things work and then DIYing a track together. I think a lot of independent musicians are having to become so multifaceted and learn all these different skills and becoming a bit of a jack of all trades. I've had a love-hate relationship with social media, like, since I started putting out music in lockdown. But I think there's a lot of pressure as an artist, especially like when you're seeing people blow up on TikTok who sort of, you know, put out a viral little snip of their song and then it goes crazy and it's the first thing they've ever done, and then they go straight to get signed by a major or something and their trajectory goes like crazy and maybe they're like 18. So I think we live in a sort of society that's very trend-based, and music has become a little bit more disposable. We're focusing on sort of the hooks rather than listening to a full song. And I think in that kind of space, it's very easy to get a bit disheartened when you're, you know, putting your heart and soul and your own money as an independent artist into making a thing and then putting it out there and maybe not getting where you need to be. But I've sort of tried to reframe my outlook on it. I'm trying to be a bit more playful with social media now and not overthink it and just see it as sort of trial and error. It's a fun place. There's like loads of people on it that could potentially be your new audience. The reason I have found it quite difficult the first year or two I was putting out music was, I think it was a bit of an ego thing. I was like, oh, I can do this all myself. I'm not going to ask people for advice. Like, I'm going to just do it all by myself and then I can, you know, feel pride in it. And I've had to really let that go because it was even affecting live, where I was trying to do too much. I was playing all the synths, I was doing all the sound engineering live on stage while trying to do a good vocal performance, and it was holding me back a bit. So I think the last year I've really embraced bringing people on board. I've got an amazing friend called Alex, who's a brilliant producer, who has started performing with me at gigs. So I now have him to chat through stuff. He's great. I've been working with him at the studio and just having people who love music as much as you do and you can just bounce ideas off of helps so much. And it's even just the little things when, I don't know, you might be struggling with, I can't find a like PR agency, or how should I be doing PR? Should I be doing it myself? Like, what's a good thing to spend money on as an independent artist? Being able to bounce those ideas around with people is just great because you move forward so much easier and you feel so much more supported and you just learn so much more as well. I was really hesitant about applying for funding. I didn't know how to go about it. I didn't know how to write a funding application. And the fact Help Musicians openly advertised like one-on-one sessions with someone to talk through the application was so beneficial to me. And if I hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't have done the application. I really wanted to produce my own EP, and I didn't really have the equipment to do it. I didn't really have the confidence to do it. And it was Help Musicians funding that enabled me to buy the kit, so like mic and speakers that I really needed, proper mixing speakers and headphones, so I knew what I was doing. Also being able to send them the music and then get the funding through those demos that I'd produced just gave me that huge amount of confidence in that, oh, look, people actually do like these songs. I think I can confidently call myself a producer now, whereas I used to just say that I produce bits of music. When I, you know, don't have a team around me or a backing, I'm just a person in their bedroom making music. So it was a real confidence boost.
Help Musicians is a charity for working musicians across the UK. To find out more about the support they offer, why they do what they do, and how to support them in creating a world where musicians can thrive, visit helpmusicians.org.uk or find them on social media today.
With your band and with the journey that you're on, you know, like Help Musicians is a charity that reaches out to musicians who reach to them, who are looking for a shoulder to lean on. And during lockdown, during COVID, they contributed over £20 million to musicians, young like yourself, who didn't have a leg to stand on because they didn't have a job or any money. What's the sort of well-being structure within the band?
Yeah, man, it's something I think that we're so much more aware that you'll find probably a natural progression for bands who actually want to survive, that like starts off that likes one big party, you know, and that's a huge, huge element to the band. But the longer we've been doing this, the more we're on the road, the more it's like, well, we need to be okay. We need to be healthy. I think that's changed massively. Probably, you know, maybe 20 years ago, there was no thought for that. And you see these incredible artists just burning out and never really been able to recover from that burnout. But that's something we're super aware of. Like, oh, there's a lot of kind of exercise and health eating and stuff like that goes on for us now.
Yeah.
Which is like, and it's hard because you've got that almost juxtaposition of like, it's not necessarily what fans of rock and roll bands want to hear from the bands. You know, I think they like keeping that image painted of, you know, this band just go for it all the time.
Yeah.
And they party hard and they do this and that's this lifestyle, because there is a mythology of how great that could be. But nowadays we are certainly like super into the mindfulness, well-being, you know, because there's life out with the music, and that's when it can become quite challenging.
Yeah.
If you live in that zone so long and then you have to go, right, we've got a month off, or we need to take this time off, or I need some time to get well. It's like you need to be able to be well when you come back.
Yeah, because it's a business for you guys, you know.
Yeah, man.
I think you're right. 20, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, musicians didn't really see it as a business. They just saw it as a constant party. I know that I suffered from it, and you know, I couldn't give them monkeys and sort of slept in all sorts of weird places on my journeys. But, you know, you can't do that forever. You've got to sort of wise up. And also it's... the well-being creeps into the way that you write, I think.
For sure.
And it brings you to the centre, and your audience really appreciates you being like that, I think.
Hope so, yeah, for sure. I think it's like, we worked like jobs for years before we were doing well with the band and stuff like that. So we've always had this like idea that, you know, if someone's talking about to us about our music or stuff like that, we always refer to it as a work, you know, a job, you know, like I'm away working. For us, it's never like, we're going on tour. It's always like we're away working, you know, we're working over here. So I think that mindset's always been really like cemented in us from like having jobs on the tools, that like there's a start and there's an end to this job, and you need to make sure that you do it well.
That's amazing. And the audience that will be watching this will be very pleased to hear that. It can be really challenging being out on the road, as you know. If you're going to tour America, it's tiring. You know, you're up early on the bus, you've got your rhythm, you've got your gigs, got your audience, and you got your band, and the chemistry of human beings in a band can be complex sometimes.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, if you're seeing it like that, that's very brave, that's smart.
Yeah, it's just keeping that in practice, I think, is the thing. And, you know, as like I say, I think you really have to battle for everything, I think, in music now, because, like, so much probably of the money that was once there is now not there, which I'm sure had its own challenges as well. But, yeah. You know, right now it is like proper puts food on the table when we make our music, and that always spurs us on to like keep writing, keep creating, keep trying to develop, keep trying to do it better than we did it before.
Yeah.
Because that's always been the ethos of the band, which we're, I suppose, saying it now, we're pretty lucky to have.
Yeah. If you ever co-wrote with somebody outside of the band, who do you think you would want in your dreams to sit in a room with and work with?
Oh, it's a good question, man. That's a really, really good question. There's so many.
It's a bit early in the day, I know.
But. Yeah, man. No, but it's a good question, man. It's one you always kind of think about. It's funny, man, like, because I'm really interested in like the art of songwriting, and I think like as a writer, there'll always be that feeling of like, I could be better and I could learn this. And I really like working over the last few years. I've worked with a lot of great producers that have like taught me so much. I think it's always about like learning and developing that skill of a song and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think like going back to like we were just talking Coldplay, like I think Chris Martin's a great example of like someone who can really put a song together. When you think about like the career from the start of Coldplay to where it is now, the skills were there in a different way to what they are now, but I just love that progression. I love like the insight, and I'm always interested in writers who are quite precious about the acceptance of like an idea being a gift that comes to you kind of thing, and like it's your kind of job to act on it, like whether you've got this idea, a melody or a lyric, like not to question where it came from and act on it and do it for a reason. And I always kind of like the idea of that, so I'd like to write a song with Chris Martin just to see what goes on in there.
God, so interesting you say that, because he's somebody I'd really love to have on this podcast, but he's also somebody I'd be really interested to meet, because
yeah, man.
We're talking just a minute ago about the architecture of music and the David Byrne documentary, and you know, Coldplay very much write their songs to fit their environment and their crowd, I think. I don't know if I could do that. I'd like the challenge.
Yeah, man. I like the learning of it. Like, again, like I come from like a skills and trade background. Proper, you know, turn up on the job day one, couldn't read a tape measure, and you know, and spend like 5 years, you know, like learning the ins and outs, hey, what it takes to, you know, to ultimately like put a house together.
Mm.
And you know, I really love that side of the craft, and that's why like I love being in the studio and on stage as well. Like for me, like the thing that I need to try my best at is like the actual performance side of it, because I'm so like immersed in like the tech side of it and how everything's working and why everything's working together and stuff like that, that only in the last couple of years have I had to remind myself like, man, you're the front man, like you need to be directing everything this way and not like spinning around ideas in my head about like, can we do it like this, can we do it like that, like how's this looking, yeah. Is the lighting going like this, and you know, does this sound work here? And but yeah, man, I really love the craft of it. I think to me, like, that's a huge part of it.
As a creator, as an inspired writer, you, like me, probably have your darker moments where you think, oh my God, this isn't going to work, and
yeah,
I'm not quite sure what this record is going to do. And I know you've avoided record companies. Is there somebody that you can lean on, someone you can sort of sit down and go, you know what, this is really bugging me, and get some advice from somebody?
Yeah, I think it always, that stuff changes a lot through like the different chapters of your life and stuff like that. The bass player in a band, we've been best friends for like, I don't know, maybe like 15 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always like kind of like right hand man in the corner, like especially for the very start of the process where I think there can be a lot of doubt in a song. He's pretty good for just like, come on, keep punching through this, like this is good, this works, I'm feeling it, you know, and it's nice to have that. My wife as well, like biggest supporter of what I do, which is nice. Like I think you really need that when you're creating all the time and you have so much doubt and dark moments, like you say, and it's great having someone who's like a fan of you out with the band, you know. It's like nice to have someone who's your biggest fan who doesn't care about the band, who doesn't care about the music. Like my wife doesn't know any of my songs or anything. Doesn't care, just like cares about like my well-being.
Oh wow.
Why I'm doing it and stuff like that. So I think it's important to have like supporters who don't care about the music, which is a weird answer to that question.
No, it's an absolutely brilliant answer, and I have the same kind of support. I mean, you know, I spent millions on therapy over the years, but basically when something goes wrong and you speak to your wife about it, they give you the cold sharp facts.
Yeah, man.
They're sort of not interested in the middle eight.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very womanly thing as well. They are much stronger than us, as a certainty.
That's true. You know, there's an analogy that, you know, during caveman times, they were in the cave doing all the hard work and the men were out sort of slaughtering lions and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
But actually, we always went back to the cave.
Yeah, man, that's it, for sure.
It's the best place.
It's nice to have that support. And that's like been throughout my whole, you know, recording career, trying to be a recording artist. But I think that's something that you probably certainly never feel like one. Sometimes I think you're just constantly trying to be one. Nobody really knows what they're doing, I think, in a sense. So it's cool having a bit of support on that front.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your feelings about the streaming services? Do you get much feedback from them?
Yeah, it's a hard one, man. I think, like, we're at a stage now, like, the music industry as a whole, like, really relies on each different section to work well for artists. So, like, the recording side really relies on the streaming side, and the live side really relies on that, but also mm-hmm. the record side really relies on the live. I think there's no relationship left between all these different aspects of the industry. So, like, nobody really knows what is going on, how to work it for it to be beneficial for all parties. Like, streaming for a band like us is just not beneficial financially. And I say a band like us, but that goes for probably most artists. And it's an impossible code to crack. Everybody's trying to crack it like it's some sort of code, where it really should just be fairer. But the roots of that system go really deep. When you look at majors and shareholders and the streaming platforms, they're like, it's super deep. The roots are in there, in the ground. So I think, you know, like, I'd love to see some changes, but for there to be changes in that, it needs to be the people that is benefiting asking for change. You know, it needs to be big artists asking for change and taking a stand. And it doesn't seem to be like anybody's doing that. I just seen Snoop Dogg coming out and saying, like, this is crazy. And I think more of that would be good. Yeah. Just for it to be a more sustainable living. But again, it's hard because it's so saturated. There's so much music. Everybody can make it, which is great, I think. I'm never going to complain about people being able to make music.
Yeah.
But super saturated, so it's hard.
It is, but you said the right thing at the very beginning of this conversation, where you said it's about live. You know, that's where you want to be on stage, you want to be in front of an audience, and that's where you're going to fill your boots financially.
Yeah.
It's not going to be streaming, it's not going to be selling vinyl copies of your album. Yeah. And it's the same for, well, all of us, I guess, now. That's just the way it is.
But does it need to be the way it is? That's the thing. I'm kind of that way because... Well, maybe it doesn't need to be exactly like that. I think there should be some sort of, at least, discussion of reform, I think.
Yeah.
Would be a cool place to start, you know? Because ultimately, you're putting a lot of time and effort into selling something.
Yeah.
And, like, ultimately, if the live industry wasn't being barred as hard as it is at the moment, you know, that would be an easier kind of pill to swallow, in a sense, was like, cool, that's where you can fill your boots. But the live industry has been systematically barred also. So it's a hard one.
Yeah, I was reading this morning that yet more clubs and theatres are closing down because they just can't keep the lights on. And, you know, I played in a small club last night and just on my solo tour, and it was full and it was joyous. And I just said to everybody, you've got to keep coming back here. You've got to keep this place going. It's really important.
Yeah, it's for sure, man. It's a nice movement, I think, by artists and these venues, you know, that making people aware that they are, like you say, struggling to keep the lights on. It's just a tough one, man. I think the industry are always, like, it's in a very confusing space for everybody in it. Whatever side of the music industry you're working in, I think everyone's really confused about what the future looks like for it.
Yeah, it affects people in different ways. I saw Lewis Capaldi at Glastonbury last year. I was lucky enough to be down the front, and I was sobbing my eyes out.
It was heavy, man. I mean, we know Lewis well.
You know, you do? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, man, he's from the same town. Well, we're from a town called Whitburn.
Oh, yeah.
And he's from a town called East Whitburn, so there's probably like 11,000 people in Whitburn.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be like maybe another 3,000 maybe in East Whitburn.
Mm.
So a small place, played all the pubs, like growing up together and stuff like that. That was heart-wrenching performance. That we were in America, watched it on iPlayer, and I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
Heavy. It's going to be a tough one for him to come through. But ultimately, his songwriting can withstand that kind of pressure.
For sure.
He doesn't have to perform it live. He is lucky enough to be able to sell zillions of downloads and what have you.
Yeah. again, comes with the hard work, and he's another man that I think been impressive in terms of, you know, really trying to understand like the art of a song. He's kind of like almost now past that. He's into the pace of like understanding the art of a hit as well, which like, you know, most people never get anywhere near. So I think it's like stuff like that comes with hard work, as you know. It doesn't just kind of land on your plate. So
yeah,
it's impressive, man.
Is he somebody you could break bread with and write a song with, do you think?
I don't know, man. I think we probably like came from like maybe too similar of an environment,
yeah,
in a sense. Mm-hmm. And like we were always, like I say, when we were younger, it was like we were trying to be a big rock and roll band. We thought we were like the Libertines. And Lewis always had this in his mind that he was going to go and do like the pop star singer songwriter. That was always the intention. He said it to me as clear as day. You know, there was never any kind of falsity about what he was wanting to be. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think we were always trying to work out what we were wanting to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a sure stead in what he wanted to do, which was cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The Help Musicians charity is an extraordinary place. They have a well-being wing of their charity called Music Minds Matters. And, you know, they get a lot of phone calls and people calling them up that are in dark spaces. But the interesting thing about it for me is that the songwriting is the therapy that brings everybody through, however dark. And, you know, you seem to have the vision and the focus to be able to use that to your greatest effect, I think.
When it comes to writing songs, to me, I think it's always just like, it's a need to. And I was writing songs before we had the band, you know, before I even thought about really performing them, in a sense.
Mm.
And also, like, as soon as a record's finished, like, you see a massive dip in where I am emotionally because, like, put all this in and then stop writing. And it's like, just go down with this. And I feel and say, like, I need to write something, you know, and put it away in the hard drives or in the phone. But there is, like, a need to do it. And it's funny, my grandpa is, like, he's a musician, like, brass bands orientated.
Yeah.
So, like, plays, like, euphonium and tuba, plays them all, like, but passionate his whole life about it. And he always says to me, what he said to me when I was younger a lot, that, like, music's a disease and there's no cure. And I always thought it's, like, such a dark way to look at it, man. But like the more that like I'm in it and I'm nervous, I'm like, oh, it's kind of, it does have that pendulum swing of like that as an element of it. It's quite heavy.
So do you need to write for your well-being?
I think so. I think it's probably a way of like processing. I was going to say it's a way of processing like the subconscious.
Mm.
Probably creates a bit more room upstairs to kind of focus on real life. Sometimes it's hard for like, I think I've always got this... always try to draw like a clear line in the sand of like music life and real life, and yeah. I think they've got to work together, but I think that just for me that I think one can never be more important than the other.
Sure.
And if it was to choose, like I think I need to choose like real life kind of vibes, just because like I think it's like it's lasting and it's important. But yeah, I think I always try and keep them very separate in terms of like how I'm feeling.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
It is, but it's kind of like, you know, the reason you're on this earth, I think, is because you write those songs and that's who you are. You're Jack and you have the band and, you know, when you get up in the morning, that's who you are. It's like when Bob Dylan wakes up, he's Bob Dylan. He's nobody else.
Yeah,
although he has an incredible artistic side to him where he paints. And he also makes gates. I don't know if you're aware of that. But he,
yeah, man.
I've seen his exhibition and it was...
Gates are good, man.
Mind-bending.
He's a good gate maker, aren't he, man? Yeah, man. I love his paintings as well. But I think that's the thing. And I think like that nowadays, it's like maybe to me, it feels like it's probably more difficult to have that disconnection. Make sure that you can be a musician and you can, like, I can be Jack and I can be the band, but I can also be like husband and father and stuff like that and friend. And it's like being able to make sure, for me, which I think is important, is being able to have that disconnect. I think sometimes the last thing I want to do at like a social occasion is sit and tell stories about being on tour or talk about my songs or talk about my gigs. Like, I think when I'm out of that space, I just want to be like, what's happening with you? Like, you know, what is like anything that's not the music? I don't know if that's a different take on it or like less devoted to it, but like, I think that I'm very conscious of like, I need to be something else too, just from a well-being, man.
That's a very good answer to it. But I know you're playing down south near London. I think it's St. George's Hall,
yeah,
I'm
man.
Not quite sure. But it's a venue that I've played too. It's a terrific, it's like a church. It's an amazing place to play. So I'm going to try and come along and say hi.
Awesome, man. I mean, more than welcome.
But more importantly, I just want to say thank you so much. When I got asked to have an interview with you, I kind of did a lot of listening, and I was like really drawn into what you write and what you represent as a songwriter. And it's been a big thrill for me to talk to you today. So thank you so much, Jack.
Thank you so much, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. Superb, man. Lovely to meet you, man.
See you soon. Keep going.
Catch you soon, man. Take care. Cheers.
What a great guy Jack is. He has a level head and it's screwed on, which is amazing. Unlike me at his age, my head was not screwed on. It's truly heartening to know that young bands have mindfulness as part of a built-in feature of their touring life. They'll be all the better equipped to deal with whatever comes their way, in my opinion. With their new album Millennials, I can only see the Snuts heading upwards and onwards. I very much hope so. I love talking to Jack. What a great bloke. You can discover how to support Help Musicians, and you can find them on all social media platforms, or you can go to their website at helpmusicians.org. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Gimme Sugar production for Help Musicians.